go ahead and start the afternoon. I wanted to thank everybody for sticking it out. I know the weather's getting nicer out there, but we just have a few more hours left. But it's chock full of really good presentations, so it's pretty exciting. The first person we have is going to be Bill Hoffman, who is now actually the president of his own firm. It's H.W. Bill Hoffman and Associates. And what he does is specialize in sustainable water resource planning and conservation. But Bill's been involved in water conservation and resource planning for a number of years, and we're really excited to have him here with us this afternoon. He's going to talk about the commercial sector and really what's going on with water conservation, water use efficiency within that sector of the economy, and he's also going to give us some insight on the green building movement and how that ties into water conservation. So thank you.
All right. I'm very glad that y'all clapped beforehand, because probably afterhand you won't. So with that said, this weird thing, ICI. Whoops, I'm going too fast here. What is ICI? It's institutional, commercial, industrial type programs. All those things that you normally don't think about in a normal water conservation program. Stop and think about it. Regardless of what people were talking about this morning, I think most people start out at the home when they think about water conservation. But as we will see, there's a lot of difference out there. And I will go here. First place, why are we looking at this? For less than 5% of your connections usually account for your biggest water use, and yet they're ones that never get addressed, but they can account for half the water use and get the biggest bang for the buck. Something Karen said this morning, 50% of her programs in San Antonio, 50% of the water savings comes from the ICI sector. In fact, it's 50 to 70%, and that's true for Austin, the two programs which probably have the biggest ICI programs in the state of Texas at present. So your biggest bang comes from working with your smallest number of customers. Now think about what that can mean for you in resource and how much time you can put into it. But then there are other things that I also want to talk about in these programs. This also offers you an opportunity for something called buying back capacity. Now, I want to just give you a picture of 1 gallon jug, and think of this. To provide 1 gallon of water per day of treatment capacity on the water side with this typical surface water plant, and that's where most of the cities, big cities in the United States get their water from, is surface water, cost anywhere from $2 to $4 of capital investment to build that capacity to provide 1 gallon of water per day. On the wastewater side, depends on your wastewater discharge permit, but the prices are very much the same. So we can be anywhere from, every time we save 1 gallon per day on a permanent basis, we can back out a future capital investment. Again, capital investment's a one-time thing. I'm talking like buying a house now. A one-time capital investment of some $3 to $8. And it doesn't take a whole lot to get that 1 gallon out on the commercial side, as we'll see. And that's something we want to talk about. First of all, let's look at the targeting use in this area. If you look at the entire state water use, our biggest water use out here is ag, and it's about 62% of all the use. Industrial, that's self-supply, straight industrial type use, is about 14%, and 24% is municipal. Well, the ag is almost all either self-supplied or coming from a river diversion. It's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the stuff that gets in here. And when you get into the side of the city in that municipal use, also there's a large chunk of that which is commercial. So when you put all of this together, there's more commercial and industrial use going on in Texas than there is residential type or domestic type use. Yet it's an area we do not target in most of our programs. And you got some really low-hanging fruit that you can go after there, and some really great success stories. We're going to hear one here in a few minutes. But let me keep on going here. That's California compared to Texas. Again, very much, if you look at this, you have the public, which is commercial and institutional, and all of this, another big chunk of water use out there. By the way, they use a lot more water on their lawns than we do here in Texas. In Texas, instead of 50%, it's around, for irrigation, it's somewhere in the 25 or 30% range. which means that getting that water use in some of the industrial operations and commercial operations down is even more important, particularly when you start looking at this graph right here. This happens to be for the city of Austin. It's some older use, but it gives you the picture that you want to see. This black line down here is industrial. You notice it's kind of flat? It's actually been going down over time because a lot of our industries in the city of Austin have gotten significantly more efficient. But you also notice it's very flat. Most of our industry here in Austin is the microchip industry, and it takes as much water to make a chip in January as it does in July. So that's one thing. But look who's causing those peaks on the system. Obviously, residential is a big one, but the next one is that whole commercial institutional type sector. And guess where most of that water use is going? And it's out on the lawns. Look at the capacities that we have to have available to make sure that old Miss Jones can water her petunias in the middle of August. In fact, over half of the capacity that most of the major cities have in the United States, in Texas, I should say, in Texas, is sitting around doing nothing for you 75 to 90% of the time. It's waiting for you to hit that peak month. And remember those capital costs I gave you? Think about how much of that capacity is out there. That's one reason why the peak capacity is important. Also, if you look at peak capacity here, this also includes something called cooling towers. Another major thing to think about when we get to that sector. But just targeting this. If you look also at where water gets used in the commercial sector, this is a typical office building. Office building that several of the people in here actually sit in. But this is a very efficient building. It has all 1.6-gallon fixtures. It's been totally retrofitted. It has a very efficient cooling tower. But look at where the major water use is. Oops, dang, burn it. I'm not, what did I do here? I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Now go back to where I want to. Here. How many of you know what a cooling tower is? How many of you don't know what a cooling tower is? There's a lot of hands there, and you'll get to see some pictures of some of them here in a minute. But see, there's a use you wouldn't even think of. And now here's something else. Here's example of 133 campuses, elementary schools across Texas. Look at this. You have schools that are averaging somewhere around 12 gallons, 10 to 12 gallons per person per day of water use. That's the students and faculty, staff combined. You have some that had bad meters. And then, you know, you better go take a look at these guys right in this curve here because they're really doing something wasteful out there. And you can learn a lot. Go back here, look at what are you guys doing? What are you guys doing? What's the difference? You can do a lot of learning by doing this benchmarking type work like this and looking at various campuses. Another example of types of things you find in the industrial and commercial type sector. We all have it. We all have some of these out there. But I'm going to talk a little bit about another interesting thing and tie it back into the industrial and commercial sector. In the United States, 8% of all the gross BTUs we use in our society, 8%, is used by water and wastewater. That's a huge chunk. In Austin, Texas, if you take a look at all the electricity that the city government uses, that's for street lights, traffic lights, at the airport, for running office buildings and everything like that, 60% of it is used by water and wastewater. Utility. It's a very energy intensive business. So as I couch my remarks, I want to talk and try to incorporate all these different thought processes into what I want to talk about commercial and institutional and also industrial type water conservation. You saw this slide earlier. I don't have the numbers on here, but you get the idea. It's a very intensive business. In California, it's even more intensive because they had to pump that water up over a hill to get it there, or actually a huge mountain range. But it is there, and it's real. There's another one that gets forgotten, and that is for heating water. It is a huge energy user. You noticed in California, over 30% of the gas used was for heating water. It's a little less here because we use a little more for heating homes. They have some very nice climates there. But if you look all over the United States, it's still a huge chunk of water that goes in, of energy that goes in there. And look what it cost you. If you heat water 70 degrees, and by the way, we have that gets you up to about 140 degrees here. As you go north, it might only get you to 120 degrees, but which is typical range for water heaters, okay? What do we have here? If you are paying water and wastewater combined, we talked about water prices this morning. Most utilities are now basing their wastewater charges on a volumetric basis based on how much water you use. So if you put those two together and look at their cost, you know, it could be $5 to $10 a 1,000 gallons, which is a half a cent to 1 cent a gallon, if you want to think of it that way. And that'll come into thinking here in a little bit. But if you take a look at the energy cost for heating that same 1,000 gallons of water at 8 cents a kilowatt hour, that is costing you $14 a 1,000 gallons. That's 1.4 cents a gallon. It costs more than the water and wastewater cost combined cost. And 8 cents. How many of you pay somewhere between 7 and 8 cents a kilowatt hour? How many of you pay less? How many of you pay more? A whole bunch of hands. Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. Gas, somewhere between $8 and $10 an MCF. And this is assuming about a 70% overall efficiency on the gas heater. You're still at $8 a 1,000 gallons. Just a tad shy of a penny a gallon. So when you take that shower and you have, you know, it's about 75% hot water, 25% cold water, it's probably costing you 2 cents a gallon to run that shower, 2 cents a gallon. And you're running that thing, if you have the old shower head and you're running it at 5 gallons a minute, that's 10 cents a minute. And you're taking a 10-minute shower, you get the idea. It's costing you, that shower costs you $1. Now, I'm going to go back to another one on the, you know, so all these things, when you put it together, it adds up to real money, people. And that's kind of where I'm coming from. Why? Because when you get in the ICI sector, these are bottom line people. When you're at home, you don't necessarily think of that. But when you're in business, you have a bottom line to meet, which means that you can sell conservation quite often there where you can't sell it at home. And you have fewer customers, and you can get more for the bang. So let's take a look. And I also want to point out, by the way, the energy connection, water connection go back the other way. It takes about 0.4 gallons of water evaporated to generate 1 kilowatt hour of electricity. And so in this case, we, you know, traffic lights stay on 24/7. In this case, you replace one bank like this. Each one of those is 135 watts. With a 15-watt LED, which is, if you look, go around here, these are the nice bright ones that are around here. You save about 1.2 gallons per set that you put up there per day in the power plant water use for its generation. And how many of those are in your city? You know, each intersection has at least 4 of them puppies. You know, you get the idea. I want to make sure everybody knows that there's a back and forth on all this. And so now, finally, let's get and talk about water. Well, we have a lot of different examples in the ICI sector. You have anywhere from industry to golf courses and pools to schools. How many of you have schools in your community? How many of you don't have schools in your community? How many of you have grocery stores and convenience stores? And I could go on. A lot of people, I go and talk to a lot of cities, so we don't really need to get into it because we're not really an industrial city. I said, but boy, you sure have a lot of commercial and institutional type users out there. Let's take a look at them. And when you look at them, things just naturally get different because you have a lot of different technologies that you want to look at. I'll let you read this yourself, but you can see things in there that you might not have really thought about. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some of these. First place, let's look at restrooms. Everybody knows about restrooms, right? And well, we're talking public restrooms. And so probably a little more public than I really wanted. By the way, they claim when the door closes that it closes an electric circuit and makes that glass go dark where you can't see in. And it'd be my luck it'd have a power failure in the middle of it, you know? But these things are inherently different than the regular toilet. I mean, I don't think I need to tell you that. And so I'm going to talk to you, though. We talked this morning about something about getting modern with a 1.28 gallon or the high efficiency toilets. They're just now getting the test out on the flush valve type toilets. Those are the kind that you find in the restrooms. Have the little silver handle in the back that you push with the standpipe on it, that kind of toilet. They're coming in, and they're coming in big. If you're not familiar, and this goes for any of the testing out there, there is some really realistic testing going on to make sure that these new genre, new generation of toilets really work well. A lot of you can remember in the 1990s when we started with the 1.6 gallon flush toilets, some of them didn't work worth a darn. Well, they're testing them, and they're testing them most realistically. Yes, this is a real test medium. And now, just it's right after lunch, but I thought I'd get you into toiletology to start things out with. And I'll give you a stat that you're just dying to know. But the 95th percentile volume of a male, now I'm glad I wasn't a tester on all this, is 250 grams of waste. And if you look up here, this I'm going to go back here to this line right here, and here's the 250 gram line. The current test standard that is used by the EPA WaterSense program is 350 grams plus the paper, and they set them up there, and they do it pretty realistically and test the toilet to make sure it works. Well, you know, that is actually a soybean product type paste. Just so you know, it actually smells like soybeans, like soy sauce a little bit. Yeah, I've been around this business too long. You don't even know it, never mind. But the whole point is that we have a whole new genre of water-saving toilets coming out. Everything from the dual flush, this is the uppercut, it's very interesting. You do up for number one, and you do down for number two. And your problem here is if you put it in a really public place, people don't get used to this. You put it in an office building where the same population uses it all the time, then they can get educated on what this means, unless you know what it is. We have 1.28 GPF toilets coming out. This Kohler unit right here will put down 1,000 grams. Remember 250 grams? I mean, it'll pass a minibus. Okay. Way too fast. I have to get you, also we have other fixtures out there that are different from what you normally see. And this makes for an interesting thing when you're doing audits in buildings as opposed to home. The women's restroom, they use 3.5 to 4 flushes per person per day. In the men's room, it's only 1.1 to 1.2 on the toilets, but then you have the urinal flushes that are coming in after that too. And most of the urinals, if you look at that, all different kind of urinals are out there. We have the regular washdown type urinals, like this up here that you find a lot of places. A lot of these can use the standard today. National Energy Policy Act standard is 1 gallon per flush. There are half gallon per flush urinals out there also, and some of these will actually work at that type of a level. You have the old blowout urinals, which I hope they're getting rid of because they need about 3.5 gallons per flush. It looks like a toilet hung on the side of the wall is what it looks like. You have waterless urinals, which have been used in a lot of cases. Some places they work, and some places they found they don't work. The jury's out on a whole bunch of the stuff there, but they are there, and they are being used. The Uniform Plumbing Code is just now recognizing them. And then there's a whole new bunch of ultra-low flush urinals that are coming out there using like 1 pint of water per flush. And they do have the advantage of a washdown and also of washing the drain line out a little bit because you can get some buildups in the drain line sometimes too. So a lot of different things are happening in the commercial sector when it comes to plumbing. And it doesn't stop just at plumbing. It stops at the dollars on that again. Look at what you save. Now I'm going to give you an example. First place, let's take a restaurant. A restaurant toilet gets used some 50 to 150 times a day. Now think of that. Let's just go with 100 uses. If you had the old 5.5 gallon flush toilet in there, and I'll use the city of Austin as an example, it would cost you about a nickel a flush. for the water and wastewater. If you put the 1.28 in there, it's going to be just a little over a penny a flush. You're saving 4 cents a flush, and you flush 100 times a day. That's $4 a day. That's a lot of savings to that restaurant owner. Now, in office buildings, it's 20 or 30 flushes a day per toilet. You got a lot more flushes per day than you do at the household on the average, unless you have a whole bunch of people living in the house. And so you get a lot more bang per toilet replacement than you do with commercial than you do with residential. That's one of many examples that I could give on why commercial is so important. You do that one restaurant, and you've taken care of the equivalent of about 10 households. Now, and don't forget the faucets. There's your cost of that water running right there. Because much as if it's electric heat and everything, and that's hot water, and which washer wears out first? The hot water one. It costs a lot. The standards for home faucets, Energy Policy Act, are 2.2 gallons per minute, and new commercial settings, 0.5 gallons per minute. And if you've been to a new office building, you found out that half a gallon washes your hands just plenty well. You probably didn't notice the difference. And that's the point. And so you can save a whole lot there. And then you have trap primers. You know, those little floor drains in all public restrooms have to have them in case the toilet overflows. You have a drain part to go in. Well, you have to maintain the water seal in those. The old original way was to have a constant flow system. You could put, and this is no exaggeration, 1,000 gallons down each trap each day. 500 to 1,000 gallons. That was fairly typical. That's a bunch. Think how many traps there are out there in public restrooms. Then you got into a whole bunch of new systems out here. Time delay solenoids. They work pretty good because they put just a little squirt. We're talking about, you know, a tenth of a gallon squirt every 2 hours, every 8 hours, whatever it works out to be. And then there are ones that actually hook onto a toilet when you flush. A very small amount, we're talking about an eyedropper full of water, goes and squirts into that little P-trap in the floor drain to help save it. And then we have P-trap primers. And you have to practice saying, this is one of the solenoid systems. And they're good systems, so nothing wrong with those. A lot of places use them. They like the water under pressure. Another one here is, this is a Primese P-trap primer. You have to practice saying that. And every time you wash your hands, this hooks up to the laboratory where you're washing your hands, and a little bit of that water, you see, this is your level of the drain here, and a little bit of that water dribbles over, goes down through a copper pipe and into that drain on the floor down there. So a lot of technology is in the bathroom side of things. And you always have a plumber. More and more we're getting plumbers willing to come help on these things. And I hope I'm not putting you to sleep here with this, but the other one is we get into landscape. We had a whole lot of talk about irrigation controllers and proper irrigation. And believe me, it is an extremely important component. But let's look at what we need to think about. The first thing is what's your soil? Karen mentioned that this morning, and that's super important. How do you shape the land? Berms, swales, terraces, rain gardens, micro basins. These are all words you will be learning in that area. When does this all occur, those first two? It occurs when the developer develops the site. By the time you buy that house, by the time the Walmart opens, all of this is all over at that point. And it has the greatest potential for several things out here that I'll get into. And think of stormwater control, non-point source pollution control, and rainwater harvesting. Keep those in mind. And then you have choosing appropriate plant material, the proper irrigation system, capture on-site sources of water, which goes back to up here again, and the symbiosis between landscape and stormwater control, and the new mantra, keep it where it falls. There is a new thing out there. I'm going to show you. This is some actual commercial parking lots. You notice this one up here? It's all mounded up. When you irrigate, guess where that water goes? You can see where that water went. How can you irrigate efficiently on a mounded piece of earth after it's gotten a little bit compacted and hope for that water to stay there? This is a little better because it is flat. And these guys actually have recessed in a little bit below the curb line, so it will hold water that falls there. But isn't this a whole lot better way of doing it? Now, what are those for? Those are for stormwater control. They are using vegetative strips for removing pollutants from stormwater. But with the proper soil and the proper everything else, you follow the example of keep it where it falls, and you get to be a lot more efficient on the irrigation too, because guess what? The irrigation water stays where it falls too. And that's where you want it to be. Besides that, as we go through and look at this, there's a new, the new thing is LID. That stands for low impact development. I say keep it where it falls is what it stands for. But again, you see the thing, shaping the land, draining that parking lot into the landscape, rather into the big ugly hole that you have, that most people do at the end of the parking lot. Let the landscape be the storage media for that water, which means you have to have properly amended soil of proper depth. Important, there's no way to get around it. Some things that I would love to see get it. What? And boy, bloom, blah, blah. Well, you know, y'all saw that already, so we'll... I got it. I think it'll go back, won't it? No, it won't. It won't even go back. There we go. We got to go forward on it. Here.
Now we're all the way to the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, for a quick review. Sorry about that, guys. Anyway, okay, you got that, and we get into this. Okay. That's where I wanted to go. And also, obviously, proper controllers. Smart controllers are out there. They're coming, and they're going to be the way to go in the future. There's still some kinks to work out with them. And there's one thing I'll say about all these landscapes, is the human side. I know, Karen, I know in the talk, went out and did a look at a bunch of homes that had been built and had irrigation systems, and they had put in the establishment cycle, you know, the rice growing cycle. And a year, 2 years later, they were still on the rice growing cycle because nobody reset the thing and got it to be smart. You've got to be smart to make it smart. The first smart has to be here, not in the controller. But smart controllers are great as long as they have the system to back them up. And the primary system is the person operating it. You'll want to look at this organization. You can get into it. It's growing a lot of good info on all this type of stuff. And I noticed some people writing. I will tell you that you can get to it. If you just put SWAT, Smart Water Application Technology, you'll get to it, into a Google site. Now I want to talk about other things. Don't forget the pools, the tubs, and the fountains. Pools, type of filtration system, but meter on the refill line is what I want to make a point on. We had a executive of a large firm in Austin, Texas, Bob's with the city of Austin, who continuously had some of the highest water bills. We're talking over 250,000 gallons a month. Finally got hold of him because their accountant had been paying the bill, and the majority of that was in a leak in their swimming pool. And it was an oh my God. They went down to, I think the next month, they went down from 300,000 or 400,000 gallons to about 16,000 gallons. They still have a huge landscape. And if they would have had a simple meter that cost $35, cost you another $50 to get it installed when they're putting the pool in, when you're putting that $5,000 pool in, spend another $50, get one in. And it'll tell you if you got a leak, simple as that. A lot of things, sub-metered. We'll talk about metering more. And, of course, they're cow washes. Oh, that's a real picture. I mean, that is for real. Only in Texas, right? We talk about commercial car washes. You know, they usually use less than half of 1% of your total water use in the city. How they're set is very important. The drive-through things you see at the filling stations, you can have those that wash a car with 30 gallons of water and those that wash a car with over 100 gallons of water. And believe me, 30 gallons of water you're going to use more with a, if you live pretty, particularly if you use that garden hose running, you can use well over 100 gallons to wash a car too. So, but there again, San Antonio and Austin both have regulations on how much water they can use. San Marcos, I believe, and do y'all have that in College Station too? Okay. A lot of cities are doing this though, either requiring recirculation or requiring certain limits on how much water per vehicle can be used, getting on up like that. You get to food service. And there's a whole laundry list and laundry list and laundry list of things out there. Pre-rinse spray valves, 10 minutes to go, my goodness. Pre-rinse spray valves could go on down like this. Ice machines, by the way, at 100 pounds of ice is 12 gallons of water. You have machines that use 12 gallons of water to make 100 pounds of ice. You have water cool machines that use 200 gallons, and they cost a lot. You have all kind of things in the cooking area to get to. Laundry. Huge advances happening in the commercial laundry system, just like they are in the residential system. We have one system here that recycles water through a treatment process. I could go on medical stuff all day long, but I'm going to just show you. We mentioned the dental vacuum pumps this morning. Huge thing. Sterilizers. Here's a lab. A lab with a flow, once through cooling, 2.5 gallons a minute. Look here, it's been going so long it has algae growing in it. As opposed to doing the efficient things like they are at Berkeley, UConn, and the University of Texas, and a lot of most of the cases for the other stuff out there. Cooling towers, we've talked about that. A huge opportunity, and the biggest opportunity is what is the cooling tower for? Is to get rid of unwanted energy. How many of you have unwanted energy? And we have the cooling tower programs, but the biggest one is energy conservation and not having to use a cooling tower in the first place. They are great where they're applicable. I have nothing wrong with cooling towers, and we need them. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying be smart in your application. I could go on down alternate sources of water, and I might run over a second on this, but I want to get into showing you what we have here. We have a lot of great examples. AMD has a new building out here, 1.3 million gallons of storage. They're catching their stormwater and AC condensate and using it for landscape irrigation, a huge site. Here's a guy, a veterinarian, that catches his stormwater and AC condensate, 100% of his irrigation, and he got all this exempt from, all this area here is exempt from property tax, and everything he purchased was exempt from sales tax, thanks to the state of Texas. Here, a Tarrytown Methodist Church, they collect water from the underground parking garage, French drain system. They collect enough water for all the irrigation, and by the way, they sprinkle when they baptize. They baptize 2.5 million people a day with that water. University of Texas. University of Texas catches over 100,000 gallons of water a day from AC condensate, French drain systems, and other sources, and uses it in their cooling towers. Probably one of the best examples around. City Hall does a lot with AC condensate. Here's a LEED Platinum project in New York. Gray water I could go in. The biggest thing is we have a lot of gray water. It can be reused. You can either reuse all of it in very complicated systems or very simple systems. And it's, opportunities abound. And I talked about that. And now I'm going to go straight to industry. We have big industrial users, and they're getting a lot of changes here. But look who the big ones are. Chemicals, electricity, refining. You notice you didn't see microelectronics in there, which is an interesting one. They use a fair amount of water, but not like these guys do. And they're getting a lot better all the time. So also, here's another energy and water connection. In the state of Texas, a huge amount of our industry is either making electricity or directly related to oil and gas production and refining. So it's all directly energy related. And the other industries, another big chunk of it is for either cooling water or boiler feed. And only about 22% is for all the other type of industrial uses. A very interesting thought process. And you could go through there and remember this. Now, green building, and I have about 3 minutes. I have seven? Good. Because I want to talk about where do we go for help? I was going to go for help and say, give me a little more time. No. There are a lot of tools available. We have those new standards. We've talked about the WaterSense program and Energy Star, information and publications, technical organizations, water efficiency consulting groups, financial assistance and tax breaks, and government initiatives. Well, let's just take a look and see. I'm telling you, when you start looking at water conservation programs, there are two cities that have longstanding ICI programs in the state of Texas, San Antonio and Austin. Others are developing them as we speak and are getting them going. It's the last thing you get because you have to have people who have some background in that area to know what to do. I'm an engineer, so, you know, technology doesn't scare me sometimes. But all these new initiatives, there are huge numbers coming down, and I'm just going to give you some real quick examples. One of them, very interesting, President Bush has put an order out to reduce water by 2% a year through the year 2015. That's going to be a huge reduction in water use over the time at federal facilities. Very happy to see that occur. Something you may not have thought of a source for that coming from, but there it is. Here's another one. We have enough green initiatives out there to make you green. U.S. Green Building Council, Green Globes Initiative, these are major national initiatives. I've had the pleasure to be on both of those, a couple of ASHRAE committees, and then I could go on down on this. We have LEED, Low Energy and Environmental Leadership and Energy and Environmental Development. Yeah. Just look at this. Look at the list here. Here you got a whole bunch of different things that are covered. You probably found something in that area. I could go on that, but I want to mention about these other things. Here's a new standard that's just coming out. It'll be a standard for buildings to build to. And for the first time, it includes a lot of process water in it. The old LEED, the leadership process there. Only 5 points out of about 70 were water. Now it's going to be a lot more on a lot of these other things. We're coming on, and we're moving. Over 90 cities have their programs, the first one being Austin, Texas. It was the original Green Build program, and they should be proud of it, proud to live in the city. It's a bandwagon effect. It's not the only thing, though. We have WaterSense, which I really encourage you to look at. By the way, Energy Star is also putting water parameters in on some of their stuff, too, for the first time. Everybody is waking up to this water thing, even on the energy side. And I mentioned Consortium for Energy Efficiency has looked at this, looked at a whole bunch of different water relations with energy. So a lot of people are starting to do this. This is an emerging thing, and you people out here who are in the environmental and green type, sustainability type movement are the ones that are making this happen. So this is your stuff coming back, and you're seeing the organizational people now starting to come back the other way with it. A lot of places are wanting to be green and build stuff for that. A lot of these different organizations that you see up here, they're all getting into these things. And actually, organizing, there's a green building program, it seems like, for every type of commercial application out there nowadays. And so things are really starting to happen in that area. We've got to make sure the water is properly injected into this whole green build program, because when they first started out, they came out with some pretty loopy ideas, to be honest with you. And we're getting there. We're getting there. Professional help, I'll mention here. We have energy-related. We have energy conservation programs. And a lot of things are now starting to be tied back and forth with each other. I know the city of Austin has joined energy and water rebates on some things. There's a lot of stuff going on in California where the California Energy Commission and other people are paying, like the retrofit program for the pre-rinse spray valves in restaurants. That's a huge energy savings and water savings. Oh. And we have help from the private sector. How many of you have ever heard of performance contracting? Yeah, a few of you have. It's a very interesting way of financing things. You have shared savings and technical assistance that come out of the private sector, in which you actually have professional people that do this. It's been big in the energy side. If you've ever done energy-type work, energy conservation-type work, all these things are big there. Performance contracting says, we'll come and sign this contract for you, in which we will fund all of your improvements up front on our nickel, the company nickel, as opposed to your nickel. But then you will pay back at a certain rate for so many years. It's kind of like a loan, but it's based on the amount of water, in this case, that you'd be saving. On the others, you have shared savings, in which I go into a contract and said, you know what? We're going to take X percent of the difference between what your utility bill is now and what it was, and we will do this on an annual basis based off your real bill. That's another way of doing it. And then, of course, professional help. There are other things out there. There are training programs. If you're going to start an ICI program in your utility, you really need to get someone who's been there before to kind of help you get it started and to train your people to get them going. And there's all kind of things that can go on there. There are people out there that can do that. I have, in my closing remarks, higher education has come, you know, there are demand-side management or energy conservation programs in almost every major university out there, where they do research and actually do coursework in this area and everything. On the water side, there are some very good programs on the landscape irrigation side, but to have something on water efficiency at the urban level is far and few between at universities. I don't think you have a specific program at yours. University of Texas does not. A&M has some stuff. There are other programs that have been started around. Some have been successful. Cal Poly went up and down, I believe, on that. So a lot of things out there, but it all comes down to this. And see the guy with his little car here, and here's, that's, let's see. Marianne, is that your vehicle here? No. No, and let's, you know, this has happened with the energy already. We're seeing it. What about water? And let's don't do that. And with that, I say thank you very much.